The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Hello, and welcome to Know the Score. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and I'm joined by my co-host, the Libra icon, Dwayne. What's going on, Dwayne?
Nothing much. NBA is back, and KD is off to a monster start already.
Oh, yeah? What's the stats looking like?
No, the stats are looking like this. First off, it looks like he never was injured, so the rehab went brilliantly. But the stats, as I pull it up right now as we speak, as we're recording this, he has 10 points on 4-6 shooting, 1-for-1 from three-point land, and he's actually outscoring the Warriors by himself 10-8.
Yep. That's the Kevin Durant we knew and loved before he got hurt.
Right.
Super efficient. And he gets buckets. So, yeah, like you said, the NBA is back. I mean, they just left us in October.
And right.
They're back here right before Christmas. So, good luck to all those guys in the NBA, man. Hopefully we don't have a lot of injuries with such a quick turnaround, guys not getting their normal time to rest and recover like they normally would for a traditional offseason. So hopefully we don't lose a lot of games and minutes to injury to key stars this year.
But right.
Switching over from NBA basketball, we're going to start the show with a little college basketball. Because we had number one versus number three this past weekend as Gonzaga flexed its muscles with a 99-88 win over number three, Iowa. Gonzaga is really good, folks, because Iowa is a damn good basketball team, and this game was never in doubt.
Okay. Every game Gonzaga has had against against the ranked opponent, let alone unranked opponents, have been monster games. And this was really never in doubt from the word go. So, yeah. And it's like I said last week, I mean, we have – it's barely like Gonzaga in the field at this point. I mean, even with all the issues they've had, they've been playing some great basketball. They beat Kansas when they were 6. They beat West Virginia when they were 11th. And West Virginia has been really the closest game as a ranked team for Gonzaga. Then they had the COVID issues where it postponed the Baylor matchup, which was 1-2, and then beating Iowa at number three. So yeah, they're really, really good. It's really hard to imagine them faltering. They got their next big matchup is Saturday when they go to Charlottesville to take on Virginia.
Yeah, they seem like they've loaded up their schedule this particular year, and they just happens to be the year that they're number one. But yeah, they're going around and they're playing a lot of names on their schedule this year. So strength of schedule definitely won't be a problem for Gonzaga when it comes down to Selection Sunday this year. The number 22 North Carolina Tar Heels, behind a strong second half of defense, they dropped the Kentucky Wildcats to 1-5. Kentucky's lost 5 in a row. Looks like they've got some turmoil now brewing inside the team as one of their freshmen stormed off the bench during the game and was highly upset with the way that he felt he was being used by Coach Calipari. So it's not all sunshine and roses in Kentucky land right now. They started out really good in this game against North Carolina. But North Carolina started focusing on defense, rebounding the basketball a little bit better. They actually made some perimeter shots in the second half, and they were able to pull away. So what do you contribute this slow start of Kentucky to?
Just like we said in the last show, this is a school that feeds off crowds. There being that there's limited no crowds, they really don't know, and they don't have that firepower that they're used to. They don't have that added incentive to get amped up. But there is a lot of chemistry issues. I from what I have seen, this is Kentucky's worst starts in 93 years. So, like, the last time they were 1-5 was 1926-27 season. So, it looks like they got up. They were playing well, and then hero ball started to happen. I think there's a lot of hero ball, a lot of selfishness going on, as we definitely saw that as well. It's one of those things where John Calipari usually has it's like a learning curve, but nobody is really learning anything. So when you have players, complaining and walking off the bench because they only play 3 minutes, yes, you're a freshman. Yes, Calipari plays freshman, but you got to fall in line. You can't do these things and expect to be a 5-1 team or be a ranked team. This is something that you have to be better. And this is something John Calipari has probably never experienced in his tenure at Kentucky, let alone anywhere he's been. So this is an adjustment for him as well.
Yeah, it seems like he is still trying to figure out his rotation. Every year he's got, a new crop of freshmen to work in, but he usually has that one, star among stars that he can kind of lean on. And this year, throughout college basketball, there is not that star among stars. So Kentucky definitely feeling the lack of star power this year in college basketball in a big way. Number 12, Wisconsin. They crushed shorthanded number 23, Louisville, 85-48. This was supposed to take place during the ACC Big Ten Challenge, but it got rescheduled due to COVID. I can't believe a Wisconsin basketball team scored 85 points in a basketball game.
Yeah, this is something you don't see very often. You don't see Wisconsin putting up these kind of numbers. It's something that I was actually impressed by. The offensive firepower that they were able to have going on. Micah Potter, Aleem Ford, those guys really played very well. Well-balanced scoring, too. That's one of the main things that I liked about this game, is that the scoring was balanced. It wasn't just all one player. It's a collective effort. And, something to enjoy once in a while, because, like I said, you don't expect 85 points from Wisconsin basketball. That's like Virginia scoring 70 in the game. Yeah. And it's just something you don't see, so when you do see it, enjoy that moment.
University of Central Florida, they upset number 15, Florida State, 86-74, snapping Florida State's 27-game home winning streak. That wasn't the only shocker, though, as Northwestern, they shocked number four Michigan State 79-65. Northwestern, they built a 13-point first half lead that they never relinquished on the route to the win. So two upsets here, Michigan State, Florida State, both are going down. Which one surprised you the most?
Anytime Michigan State loses like that, it's a surprise just because, you know, the greatness of Michigan State. But I think the UCF over Florida was the more stunning of the two, only because at least Northwestern beat Michigan at home. Florida State lost in Tallahassee. That's something where you wouldn't see very often from a Florida State, especially the last few years. So it's really shocking that UCF goes into Tallahassee and just outplays and outmuscles the Seminoles like that. So at least I can say for Northwestern, you know, they were at home, you know, they were in the comforts of their own arena, things of that sort. But for UCF, you know, who's only played two games coming into the game, so really not, you know, they have a lot of practices, I'm sure, but not enough game chemistry to go into Tallahassee, beat the Seminoles and do that. That's something to be said right there.
Yeah, definitely on the road for Central Florida coming in. Florida State had really built up a good home game winning streak, almost two seasons worth of wins, including wins over, you know, the likes of Duke and North Carolina included in that. So definitely a shocker there. Michigan State's been kind of struggling here the last couple of games early in the first halves, and it finally caught up with them as Northwestern was lights out in that first half, got that 13-point lead, and then never turned back. So college basketball wild and crazy right now as they're dealing with COVID and teams are starting to now go into their conference only sections of their schedules. So you should see maybe a lot more balancing out of the season. We've had so many upsets early on, but now that we're getting into conference play, maybe things will kind of level out a little bit.
Right. Agreed.
We're moving over to college football, the last weekend of the college football season. This was championship weekend. So Ohio State, behind a record-setting rushing performance of 331 yards by Trey Sermon, defeated Northwestern 22-10 to win the Big Ten title. Justin Fields did not have a very good game in this particular outing. I can't think of Northwestern coach. I just had a
Ramsey.
Yes, he did a very good job of playing a lot of coverage, cover two, cover four, making Fields have to read the defense and take the short throws, and they forced him into a couple of turnovers. And if it wasn't for Trey Sermon just being a man amongst boys, this outcome could have been a lot different for Ohio State.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking at the numbers for Fields, I mean, two interceptions, 114 yards passing. It was definitely something you know, Trey Sermon was the reason. There's no other way around that. So 331 yards, school record, two touchdowns. This game could have been a lot closer. I was really surprised that with the way they were running the ball, they didn't run, you know, they didn't score as much. They should have scored a lot more. That's what I would have thought anyway.
Well, Ohio State, I think, is just happy to get to the end of the season, man. You know, with all the things that's been thrown around them, this was kind of their whole goal, is to get to this championship weekend and just kind of, you know, based on the strength of what has been laid down as precedent. You know, this is only a tournament that includes the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC, and, you know, maybe a Big 12 team, definitely not a Pac-12 team. So, you know, another SEC team or another ACC team usually fills out that fourth spot. So, you know, I just think Ohio State was just, you know, just trying to get here, get to this win, even though it was ugly, and then they can, you know, say, hey, we got the title. We think that we deserve to be in the next tier and play some more games. Clemson, they got their revenge on Notre Dame, 34-10. Trevor Lawrence had over 400 yards of total offense and three touchdowns as Clemson wins the ACC championship again. Definitely not the same as the first game. Clemson was definitely dialed in, tuned in, and their defense was ferocious. They had Ian Book running for his life. Notre Dame couldn't run the ball. And then offensively, Trevor Lawrence showed them that even though DJ threw for like a gang of yards, over 400 yards, just Trevor Lawrence's accuracy, his precision, his just mental acumen for the game was just too much for Notre Dame. Plus his running ability too. They broke out the old cheat code, which is yeah, this dude's a pretty good runner as well. So Clemson, ACC champions again.
It was really how I thought it was going to be. I mean, a completely different story. Yeah, Clemson just did Clemson things. I mean, I remember when that used to be a verb for things bad happening, but in this college football playoff era, Clemson doing Clemson things is the complete opposite. So, yeah, this was definitely how it played out. Trevor Lawrence was a difference maker. Defense had a lot more intensity, and that was the big difference in the game there. So.
Alabama, they win the SEC championship on the strength of five Najee Harris touchdowns, 52-46 over Florida. The game score is a little bit closer than the actual game was if you were watching the game. I mean, what more can you say about Najee Harris? I mean, it's a big dude that's really fast and has a knack of finding the end zone.
This I didn't watch the game. I kind of had to just run it off the highlights. So, I mean, when you like you said, when you look at the score, it's like, oh snap, this was like a thriller, but it really wasn't. I mean, there's like you said, I mean, big man with football, he could throw the ball, has a lot of very smart with the football. So, great talent, and like you said, there's really not much you can say about Alabama that's already been said. I mean, looking at this college football playoff field that we'll get into in a second, it's gonna be I think it's gonna be pretty predictable on what's gonna happen.
Speaking of the college football playoff, the matchups were announced. We have number four, Notre Dame, taking on number one, Alabama. And we have number three, Ohio State. So, yes, they are in the college football playoff despite playing only six games. They are going to play Clemson as the number two seed. So I'm going to ask you in our too early to call it handicapping prediction segment of this who's going to be playing for the national championship? Which two teams out of those two matchups?
So the predictability factor here looks like it's going to be, once again, Alabama and Clemson. I think this is going to be what, round four for the national championship. Round three for the national championship, round four in this playoff era. It's really Alabama and Clemson's world, and the rest of the nation is just living.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Alabama and Clemson again as well, depending on, you know, nobody gets hurt or we don't have a, you know, COVID situation leading up to these games, which is definitely going to be the unknown factor of if they can keep these guys healthy for the next 2 weeks till we get to New Year's Day. But, yeah, a lot of people are not really thrilled about seeing Notre Dame or Ohio State in this because they just don't feel like they have enough firepower to give Alabama and Clemson any real troubles. But, you know, what they say, they don't play games on paper. They play them inside TV sets.
They do. And then also with the Rose Bowl game being moved to Dallas, to Arlington, so that's going to be a factor too.
Right.
Yeah, so the change of venue is a factor. Health is going to be a factor. We've already seen quite a few bowl games canceled because of COVID. I know the Gasparilla Bowl with South Carolina UAB was supposed to happen, but that got canceled due to COVID. Pinstripe Bowl was canceled. So, yeah, hopefully with these big money games that with the pageantry and everything, the kids stay healthy.
Exactly. This is Know the Score. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente. I'm joined by my co-host, the Libra icon, Dwayne. Now we're about to turn it over to the NFL. Drew Brees, he returned back to live action. He's coming back off of those broken ribs, 11 to be exact. But he was outdueled in his comeback by Patrick Mahomes as the Chiefs beat the Saints 32-29 in the Superdome. Patrick Mahomes doing Patrick Mahomes things. It was on full display in this game, going against the number one rated defense in the NFL. They definitely got to our man Patrick Mahomes, but they could not slow him down enough for the Saints to pull out a win.
Yeah, it was a great effort. This was definitely one of those things where you just really wanted to see the Saints, you know, me personally, but see how the Saints would match up against the best team in the NFL. And they held their own. I think that safety that should have been a touchdown was also a factor where Alex Anzalone should have recovered that ball. But it's going to be something we may see these teams down the road again, and, you know, possibly in the Super Bowl. See if a healthier Breeze, if available, will make a difference. But the Chiefs are just balling it out right now, and they're a tough. They're going to be a tough out, and they're, you know, trying to hang on to that champion label right there.
The Buffalo Bills, speaking of champions, as they are the champions of the AFC East divisions for the first time since 1995, as they put up an impressive 48-19 win over the Denver Broncos this past Saturday. Josh Allen continues his stellar play, leading the Bills to the division title. So Buffalo's going back to the playoffs, and they look like they have found themselves a quarterback.
Yep, they did. They finally, I think the patience of this team, with Josh Allen, elevating himself into a franchise quarterback. I think the one thing that he had to work on the most, and he definitely has done this, it was his accuracy. And he's a more accurate passer. He's always had the arm. He's always had the mobility. He's got a playmaker, Stephon Diggs. I think that has become one of the biggest trades of the offseason, where they're able to do a lot of different things in terms of, you know, spreading the ball out. They have a great running game. They have a stout defense. You know, shout out to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. Playoff football in Buffalo is back. I hope it's a snow game, because we know how those fans in the Bills Mafia love to get when it's a snowy January. So, congratulations. Now with Buffalo winning the division, everybody has won a division title in the 21st century.
Next up, we have the Dolphins, sticking with the AFC East, defeating the Patriots 22-19, officially eliminating the Patriots from playoff contention, ending their 12-year consecutive postseason run. So that pretty much puts the nail in the coffin for Cam Newton, I think, coming back as a Patriots starter next year, as they have totally gone where no Bill Belichick team has gone in a long, long time. And that will be the couch at the end of the season.
Yeah, this is – I was definitely surprised by the fact that, you know, we won't be seeing the Patriots in the postseason. Kind of raise eyebrows that, you know, the Patriots, and, you know, everybody's wondering, was it Brady, was it Belichick? And quarterback play definitely was a difference. Tom Brady was definitely the model of consistency. Because, you know, there's a generation of Boston fans who have never experienced this. So they've been spoiled over the years. And now this is a harsh reality of something that the rest of the world has seen. And, you know, a bad Patriots team. But I think this will be where they are going to be at a crossroads, like you said. Don't really see Cam getting another shot in New England. He might be having to head elsewhere to continue his career. And they're going to have to either find somebody through the draft or free agency at this point.
The Chicago Bears have won their second game in a row behind Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback, 33-27 over the Minnesota Vikings. So the Vikings have dropped two games in a row, basically putting them out of contention for the wild card and the NFC. But the Bears here, they went through the yo-yo of Trubisky, then Nick Foles, and now back to Trubisky. Seems like Trubisky's time on the bench has helped him. Chicago scored 30-plus in each of the last two games. So is Mitchell Trubisky finally rounding himself into shape and can be looked at as a worthy number two pick in the draft?
I think he is. I think the last two games have, you know, shown that the game has slowed down a little bit for him. I think, you know, sometimes you just need that reset. And you know, going back to bases, going back to, you know, how you got there, and, you know, watching it from a different perspective. And now that you go back in, you got a fresh mindset, and he's shown in the last couple games that, you know, maybe he has rounded the corner. I want to be optimistic and say he has done that, but it's going to be a situation where we have to continue to, you know, build that consistency. I mean, two games is not a huge sample size, but, you know, you want to be on the optimistic side and say that this was something that was needed for him. And sometimes you just got to get knocked on your ass to kind of reassess and reevaluate who you are as a quarterback, who you are as a team player. And, you know, he's handled it very well and he gets rewarded. And hopefully this will be something that he can pull off moving forward.
The Atlanta Falcons. They've done it again. They've blown another big lead to Tom Brady. And this time the Buccaneers, they lose to the Bucs 31-27. I think they were up 24-0 or 24-3 at one point in this game. And it all came crashing down once again on Matt Ryan and Raheem Morris. So the Buccaneers, man, they are a curious case. They looked so bad in the first half, and then they just did a complete 180 here in the second.
Yeah, this was – I laugh because it's the Falcons, and this is what the Falcons do. They were up 20 – it was 24-7. They were up, and this was – this was something that I don't know. Yeah, it's just really weird how one minute the Bucks look like they look like a clusterfuck, and then the next minute they look like they cannot be stopped. They're probably one of the most erratic teams I have seen in recent memory. You don't know what you're going to get from them. I want to say that, you know, for the Falcons, I mean, this is really who they are. I mean, this is a team that just does not know how to keep the foot on the throat. It's like they get a team, you know, to the breaking point, and then they let off, and then with that little ounce that's left, that team that's down just rises to the occasion, or as Falcons fans like to say, rise up to the occasion, and they end up, you know, coming back and winning the game. And I know there's still some holdovers from that team from Super Bowl 51. They should have known that, you know, who was on the other sideline. And they should have known that, hey, we need to, you know, tighten up. And they just did not do that. And this could possibly, I mean, Raheem Morris, who was doing very well, I mean, after the 0-5 start, the team went to 4-6, and now they've fallen back to 4-10. So, this was an opportunity for him to, you know, try to audition for a job, and it's kind of slipping away now.
The Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets, they upset the L.A. Rams 23-20 for their first win of the year, but it was a very costly win, as now they have moved to number 2 in the NFL draft order behind Jacksonville. So the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, the golden ticket has changed hands from the Jets now to the Jacksonville Jaguars. People in Jets land are distraught right now. The one thing that they were holding on to was getting that number 1 pick and having that generational talent come into the fold. But now they can't even count on that. So, New York Jets fans feeling the blues right now, even after a win.
Yeah, they just can't get it right. I mean, man, this just seems like that's the Jet way. Before the Panthers, I was gangrene, so I still feel I feel the pain of the Jets fans because this is just what the Jets do. It's just one of those things where you hope that, hey, you know, something good can come out of a winless season, and then, you know, you get the win. It's like, yeah, we got the win, but we don't need the win right now. So now you gotta hope the Jaguars can find a way to win a game again. Or deal with the progression of Sam Darnold. I mean, I think in the sense of the situation with the Jets, they would have a very unique situation because they had a number three overall pick. They draft Trevor Lawrence. They still have a number three overall pick that they could probably flip into a second or third round pick, or, you know, if the value has fallen off, or if they still feel like he's worth a first round pick. But the first thing, if they don't get the number two pick, there's still a talented pool of players out. I said number two, if they don't get the number one pick, there's still a great pool of talent out there. I just think at this point, it's the coaching. And if Sam Darnold gets a different coach, this could be a different story. I mean, look at the Dolphins. Adam Gase left there. Brian Flores has done a wonderful job. You know, they made the right moves. Chris Greer has made the right moves there. And so Gase needs to go. His buddy Joe Douglas needs to go. The Jets need to overhaul, not just for the whole, not just player wise, but front office wise too.
The Bengals, they upset the Steelers 27-17. The Steelers, they commit three first half turnovers to fall behind 17-0. And the Bengals held on. Once Pittsburgh did wake up, they did make a game of it. But again, the turnovers thwarted Pittsburgh's comeback effort. So the Steelers have lost three in a row. Looks like they're kind of going through the same thing Baltimore did after their COVID cases broke out on their team. They're just, just having a hard time, you know, on offense. It looked really lethargic. The defense yesterday, last night on Monday Night Football was pretty good, but I mean, three turnovers that led directly to 17 points. It's tough to really, win football games that way. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they've hit a swoon here in the last 3 weeks of the season. They play Indianapolis, and then they play Cleveland to end the season. A lot of people are saying that, hey, Pittsburgh may not win another game, and they may not win their division. So what do you say, you, Libra Icon, about the Steelers?
I have been calling this team fraudulent for the last couple of weeks, and they are continuing to prove me correct. I don't know how you fix this team at this point, because the next two games for the Steelers are the 10-4 Colts and the 10-4 Browns. This was definitely I mean, James Conner is out. That's a factor. I mean, he's a dynamic running back, but this it's not even just the lack of runners. It's also the fact that this offense looks lethargic. I don't see them if they can't beat teams like if they can't beat teams they're supposed to beat. How are they going to beat the teams that are running with them? We saw what the Bills did on Sunday night last week, and then and now you have the Colts coming to town, and then you go to Cleveland to end the season with the seasons both of those teams are having. If they could just stop, if they stop the run, then they make a one dimensional, and that's really all you have to do at this point is just make the make them one dimensional. So I just think that the Steelers they lose a lot next couple games and they fall out of they fall out of the division race. So what was supposed to have been a lock is not so much a lock anymore.
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns, behind first-year coach Kevin Stefanski, they've really turned the corner after the injury to Odell Beckham. Baker Mayfield starting to play some really good football. So they are definitely right here in the hunt with two games to go to win the division. It looks like Cleveland's going to qualify for the playoffs as well. So shout out to Kevin Stefanski for a major turnaround with the Cleveland Browns. The Green Bay Packers, they start strong. They hold off the Carolina Panthers 24-16. That's got to be like the fourth or fifth time the Panthers have had the ball with with the ability to either win the game or tie the game
This is
or come up short.
eighth time.
Oh, wow.
They every loss the I would say at least seven of the eight losses, the Panthers have had the ball with a chance to win the game or tie it to send it overtime to increase their chances. And
Teddy Bridgewater right now just not really influencing the game a lot. He did have one rushing touchdown on scramble against the Panthers, but I mean his stats are, pretty good stats, good completion percentage, decent yardage, but I mean no touchdowns, no interceptions.
right. And the main thing is the no touchdowns. He's completing 60% of his passes. Well, this was the previous game. Let me go to 69% of his passes. But they're not getting down the field like they were at the early part of the season. And the thing with Bridgewater, he throws a lot of short passes and the Panthers get a lot of run after the catch, and they're not getting that right now. So the way that it's played out is teams are taking away those run after catch opportunities. They're stopping them right in their tracks, as well as playing, making sure they're not getting the ball too far down the field. And then at the end of the day, they're not getting into the end zone. And that's where the biggest problem is. So, a lot of, with only 14 touchdowns on the season, that's where the bigger issue lies. I mean, they haven't had McCaffrey out. Well, they haven't had McCaffrey for majority of the season, and this young defense, which really had to literally grow up with no OTAs, no training camp, no preseason, for them to basically keep the high octane, high powered offense of the Packers after, the slow start. They came around really quick, and that's really kind of been a problem as well. They've let them, what's the word I'm looking for? they let them get off to a fast start. They come around and yeah, this team's going to be good in the future. I'm not really surprised. I think the Teddy Bridgewater era might be, this might be like the first of two, maybe three seasons. And then they try to get somebody else in the fold, or if, you know, Will Greer, PJ Walker somehow take over. But I think they will probably look at trying to find a young talent at that point.
The Seattle Seahawks, behind the strength of their running game, they control the Washington football team defense just enough for a 20-16 win. Again, another case of the Washington football team getting down 17-0 before the alarm clock finally went off. Dwayne Haskins did start this game for the injured Alex Smith. Seahawks were in control, but in the second half, Dwayne Haskins came to life, led two touchdown drives, missed the extra point, which made this a game that could have went into overtime. But Washington was the ball at the end, had to try to get the touchdown, and got sacked on two back-to-back plays, went for the Hail Mary on fourth down, of course, did not make it. So now, from controlling their destiny at 4 o'clock to needing a little help, but the Cleveland Browns came through, as did the Arizona Cardinals. So it all comes down to this, at least for this week, as the old Fighting Riveras face the new Fighting Riveras, as the Washington football team play host to the Carolina Panthers. If the Washington football team wins this game and the Giants lose their game to the Ravens and Philadelphia, I think due to their loss to Arizona, with a Washington win, they'll all be eliminated, and the Washington football team will represent the NFC East in the playoffs.
Know the score ball.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So very high stakes matchup for the Washington football team this weekend.
Yeah, this will be this one. They moved the game to 4:05 Eastern, 3:05 Central. Yeah, this is, I think this will go in the favor of Washington. They're playing a lot better now that they have earlier in the season. I think the Panthers are just trudging along at this point, just trying to get to the finish line. They lost 8 of 9 coming into the game. It's kind of like a rudderless ship at this point. So I think with the momentum, even with the Seahawks, you know, they only lost by 5 to the Seahawks, who are one of the better teams in the NFC. I think what will happen is it will depend on who's starting the game for Washington at quarterback. I think they'll have a better chance with Haskins. The Panthers will have a better chance to win if Haskins starts. I think if Alex Smith starts, advantage clearly goes to Washington.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the way to handicap this game. Dwayne Haskins did show, like I said, did show a lot of improvement, but he just made some critical errors in this game early in the first half, and that's going to be paramount to this game, is whoever can get the, you know, working margin first, because both teams start out slow. So this actually may be kind of boring in the first half and then turn into a hell of a game in the second half due to, you know, both teams penchant to start slow and then, you know, turn it up in second halves. But definitely looking forward to it. And biggest game Washington football team's played this year. And for the sake of going to the playoffs, hopefully they can win this one out and, you know, have themselves a rebuild season that ended up going, resulting in a division championship and a playoff berth. Not a bad way to start the era.
Yeah, and a home game, too.
Yeah. So at this point, Mr. Libra Icon Dwayne, I'm going to turn it over to you, sir, for your shout-outs and thank yous.
Shout out to you, Don, as always. It's always a pleasure to be by your side doing this. And then shout out to all the listeners, all the podcast hosts. Shout out to my fellows at The Push. And also, I got to say, my final thought is hockey. The NHL is returning on January 13th. About 56-game season. I really wonder how this was going to work, especially for the double occupancy facilities for a lot of these teams who have markets with NBA and NHL teams. Certain teams may even have to relocate as well. What the NHL is going to do for this season is because of the issues with going in and out of Canada and into the United States, they are going to do an all-Canada North division this year. So all the teams located in Canada will be in one division, and they will be playing they'll be playing each other that way. This is going to be really something that's going to be very, very interesting to see how it plays out. I'm trying to see what's going to, so here's how the divisions, so for this, it's going to be North, East, Central, and West. So the Central division is going to be the Carolina Hurricanes, Chicago Blackhawks, Columbus Blue Jackets, Dallas Stars, Detroit Red Wings, Florida Panthers, Nashville Predators, and Tampa Bay Lightning. The East, the Bruins, the Sabres, New Jersey Devils, Islanders, Rangers, Flyers, Penguins, and Capitals. The North is all the Canadian teams, Calgary, Edmonton, Flames, Oilers, Montreal Canadiens, Ottawa Senators, Toronto Maple Leafs, Vancouver Canucks, Winnipeg Jets, and of course out west, the Anaheim Ducks, Arizona Coyotes, Colorado Avalanche, LA Kings, Minnesota Wild, San Jose Sharks, St. Louis Blues, and the Vegas Golden Knights. So that is how they will do this. The top four teams in each division are going to qualify for the playoffs. And then the first two rounds of the playoffs will be the first place team in the divisions playing the fourth place team, second place team playing the third place teams. The winners of those series will play in the second round. And then the teams at the division we'll go into the Stanley Cup semifinals, and then finally the Stanley Cup. So that is how the NHL is going to do their season.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun with the new divisions for travel, trying to make it more friendly for the travel and keeping people safe that way. Some more different matchups that'll take place. Carolina getting in a more favorable division than they've been in quite a while. So, it'll be fun to see some new rivalries shape up this year. It's only going to be for 1 year, so they say. But you never know, if this really takes off, they may reconsider, reshuffling both divisions over there for hockey.
Especially Seattle coming in the next year. So the Seattle Kraken will be team number 32. So.
Right. My final thought would be on Charlie Woods, the son of Tiger Woods, they played in the PNC Open this weekend, a father-son tournament, and you just got to see Tiger Woods be a dad, and it was all about Charlie, and young Charlie was out there swinging away and looking really good, and if he decides that he wants to pursue golf full time, as a career, he definitely has a good start and a good foundation. He looked great in the weekend playing with Tiger. So definitely impressed with Charlie Woods, and hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more from him down the line in the future. Shout outs to Deliver Icon Dwayne. Shout outs to everybody here at the CSPN. Shout out to all the listeners. Thank you guys for being with us through this year of COVID and pandemic and in and out, not being as consistent as we'd like to be, but still hanging out and hanging in with us. So we definitely appreciate it. Merry Christmas to everybody listening as well. Hope that you get a chance to enjoy your families over the holiday weekend, that you stay safe, and that you continue to listen and enjoy the content in the new year. So for my co-host, the Libra Icon, Dwayne, I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and now you know the score.